Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and we're back. We're live after the long three-day weekend, Labor Day. It is Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy Rosh Hashanah. It's the Jewish New Year. Did you know that on this day in 1630, the city of Boston, Massachusetts was founded? And in honor of yesterday's Labor Day, the original workers' compensation law, called the Workmen's Compensation Act, was passed by Congress in 1916. How about that?
How about it? And then? But, all right, thank you for those little tidbits. Always appreciate it. And gold today needed some tidbits for it to go up, but I think we're just getting, it was up Friday for the weekend. We just had some pressure on it today, so the dollar must be showing some strength. Let's see, gold today is down $30, $1,794. Silver was down 34 cents at 24.42. So both of them are actually coming back a little bit. Platinum was down 25 at 1,002. Palladium was down 40 at 2,454. The USDX today was up 0.33 at 92.54, with crude oil down 89 at 68.40. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow Jones down 269 points, 35,100. The S&P was down 15 at 4,520. But the NASDAQ was up 10. Not bad. 15,374. Europe markets were all negative across the board, all half a percent or less. Asia was all positive. Most of them were closer to 1% plus. And the 10-year yield is 1.37, so that continues to climb a little bit. So that's pretty much it. Coming back from a three-day weekend, so you had a little bit of a pullback, probably some follow through from the jobs report. We touched on it briefly on Friday, but I think we're going to talk a little bit more about it today as soon as I can bring it up here. But and of course, as we said, they're going to blame. Guess what? Guess what they're going to blame, Dave? It's the pandemic. It's all Delta's fault. You know, and we talked about the big drop that it had, but Jeremy Schwartz of the Too Big to Fail Credit Suisse says of the jobs report, it was definitely not as much progress as we were expecting. No kidding, Sherlock. But the silver lining is that you can pretty clearly point to the cause of the weakness. Well, of course, what else are they going to say? We can be confident that it isn't a trailing off of the recovery into a new run rate. Look no further than the weakness in restaurants and bars for proof that the pandemic is to blame. And, of course, they're going to continue with that theme and use it for as long as they can. Economists has expected, as we talked about, 750,000 new jobs, and they got 235,000. So I guess some good things is the job finding rate, or the rate at which unemployed individuals found jobs, that increased for the second month in a row. Well, you'd think if there were 10 million jobs available that you'd, I mean, it's a little, Dave, don't you think that that's probably a pretty common sense type of increase there?
Yes.
You know, out of 10 million, yay, that increased. They did revise June and July jobs, job numbers, and the U6 unemployment, which includes discouraged workers and those working part-time for economic reasons, that dropped to 8.8%.
Yeah, that's the number to pay attention to. Forget that bogus 5.2. It's virtually meaningless. The only reason it's got any meaning at all is because the Fed supposedly ties its decisions in part to it versus, quote, full employment, whatever that is in this day and age. But, you know, in any event, the pockets of increasing unemployment combined with the lower than expected overall growth could, at least on the margins, provide Congress with more incentive for getting another infrastructure deal or two done. We will see. I'm not sure that will have the impact that people feel it will need on a couple of votes in the Senate and a handful in the House. But seizing the moment, President Biden on Friday essentially begged the Congress to pass the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill already passed by the Senate and a $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation package. Now, wages rose in August, skewed towards some of the lower paying sectors, service and restaurant and other leisure industry jobs. And that's a positive for income distribution and helps consumer spending where it counts the most. That's according to Schwartz. Now, Ed Perks of Franklin Templeton says wage growth is going to be a bigger part of the story in the next 3 to 6 months, especially the extent to which it translates into higher price inflation. Bottom line, Melody, the underachieving jobs report will give the Fed cover for not making a decision on tapering its market support at its meeting later this month. It also makes the next few jobs reports, namely for September and October, which should begin to reflect the impact of back to school and the full roll-off of the pandemic unemployment benefits, even more consequential. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be here for you.
You know, it's funny what he says about the wage growth is going to be a bigger part of the story in the next 3 to 6 months, especially as it translates to price inflation. They're never, you know, the funny thing about it is, Dave, they're never ever going to admit that we're being priced, you know, with a greater inflation. I mean, they'll never admit to it. You're never going to hear any of these stories, you know, wage growth is going to be a bigger part. But what, you know, wage growth, how big is it? You know what? It's just, they follow these numbers, but they don't mean anything. You know, even as we talk about how, you know, the algorithms in the stock market, it's like they priced any reports out of the market. They priced out, you know, the algorithms. They priced out any emotion. And it's really the only thing that's priced into the paper markets is, I don't know.
Uncertainty and volatility.
and not even that, you know, unless something, you know, unless that it's only going to react to some sort of a, you know, major event. And it's, you know, I don't know. It's just, it will be interesting to see exactly what moves these markets and what will actually bring the correction and the collapse, you know. And again, you know, it's they have tools available to them that you know, they can print until the cows come home, but yet just regardless of what they do and how they do it and why they do it, people have to look to themselves and how does it affect you. And it is almost like we're living in two worlds. We live in the one world that affects us, the reality of things, of how the inflation, whether they say it's 2%, 10%, 15% or more over the years, it affects us. It affects our buying power. It affects your purchasing power. It affects your standard of living. But yeah, all of their hoopla and all their positive talks and so forth, and you know, and it just doesn't seem to you know, I think it was Elon Musk who says we're basically living in a make-believe world and a, there's two worlds.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I forget exactly what he said.
But it was certainly.
But that's the gist of it.
That's the gist of it. So, and I'm good at gists.
Gists are good.
Yes. Yeah.
It's sort of like close enough for government work.
Well, it's probably better than. Anyway, too big to fail. Goldman Sachs has cut its U.S. growth forecast again, citing a harder path ahead for consumers. 2021 full expansion is now pegged at 5.7%, down from 6% at the end of August. It was 6% at the end of August, and now we're 5.7. And, of course, it's all based on the slowdown in the job creation. The bank's projected headline U3 employment rate is 4.2% at the end of the year, ticking up from a prior estimate of 4.1. Yeah. They're not going to get to 4.2. But anyway, Goldman did raise its GDP growth forecast for 2022 all the way up to 4.6% from 4.5. That's a huge increase. And let's see, what else is there, Dave? Anything else?
No, I mean, the number, and while it's minute in the grand scheme of things, if you look at them closely, what it's suggesting is that what's going on in the job market, I mean, to the extent there's a further jump back, and they do now see productivity falling to the extent that it's affected by this lower growth estimate, what is it, down 3/10 from its last estimate, but only up 0.1% more next year. What that tells me is that there are other factors going on here, whether it's longer-term inflation or whether it's just the suppression of growth this fall is going to impact that the rebound from that is going to be slower than they were thinking earlier in the year. So, you know, anyone who tells you that we're going to be out of this first quarter of next year is telling you a big fib, because I just can't see us getting anywhere close to that, and even, you know, the too big to fail zone numbers are suggesting, if you read between the lines, that it's going to take a lot longer for this so-called comeback to get where they want it to be.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we'll never go back to where we need it to be, as long as, you know, the correction, or their so-called correction, is based on just the continued stimulus and infrastructure and everything else that they need to spend. So, you know, it's kind of like, it truly is amazing. It's fascinating to see to the extent. And Dave, I don't think most of us can appreciate just how big and how, I mean, you know, does anyone really comprehend the extent of what is, that has actually have happened with all of these? And it's just not the stimulus and so forth, but going back to all the stimuluses that they've created and all the bailouts that they've created and where we're at today. I mean, even the, you know, it's the trillions and trillions and trillions. Does anybody really know how big it is? Can comprehend?
Well, on the one hand, you can argue it's $28.43 trillion, which is our debt.
That they tell
certainly,
us.
That's certainly one measure of it. Now, that's just you know, that doesn't include unfunded pension liabilities or state and local government debt. That's just federal government debt.
You know, but the point is, does anybody really comprehend the how big that really is?
Oh, well,
I mean, even the CBO said, you know, our unfunded liabilities, I mean, this goes back years ago, was, what, 200? You know, if you take something in between, I mean, these are numbers, and then we do it globally. And it really is a fascinating that they've been able to control as much as they've been able to control globally. I think. But anyway, they're not controlling aluminum prices. They traded near the highest since 2011, and all based on a military coup. That's what they say, Dave. Is that correct?
Well, it's plausible. Certainly, you know, yesterday and today's trader reactions is plausible.
Can you tell us about it, please?
Well, what's Guinea got to do with aluminum, you may ask? Well, it's all about that dirty red ore called bauxite, which gets heavily processed to become the shiny aluminum. It's used in cars and our soda cans and a lot of our older siding, house siding. Now, from next to nothing in 2015, the West African nation, Guinea, emerged as a key producer of bauxite. Nearly all of its exports sent to China's vast aluminum industry. Now, the ready availability of cheap, high-quality Guinean bauxite reportedly helped cement China's position as the global leader in aluminum output. But it also leaves the world aluminum market exposed to disruption in, well, a small African country. A fifth of the world's aluminum is reportedly mined from Guinean raw materials.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So, interesting development. Certainly, to the extent that you know, that's happening, and they say that the biggest loser, at least yesterday after this coup announced, was a Chinese company. The biggest beneficiaries come from outside China. Russia's two companies surged to their highest since 2012. So, interesting bit of news in another part of the world that affects us all to a certain extent.
It does, and it just shows how we're also connected. And we're heading into a break. We're connected there. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And, you know, a lot of benefits ended yesterday. And we talked about the unemployment insurance was put in place in 2020. 9 million people will lose those benefits. Well, there's 10 million jobs out there, so that's a good thing. And another 3 million will see their weekly checks reduced by $300. But at the same time, there's some other programs that have been extended. And the state eviction protection, that was struck down by the Supreme Court. The most recent extension to the federal eviction ban. So some renters, though, may still be protected by the local moratoriums. California, Illinois, New Mexico, New York, they have an eviction bans in place that give renters protection for a few more months. We talked about the nutrition benefits, the wealth of the food stamps. That's going to increase a boatload, 25%. And so what are some other ones, Dave?
Well, you have the student loan pause. Last month, the Department of Education extended the moratorium on payment and interest of federal student loans. They say one final time through January 31st, of 2022. That gives about 42 million borrowers a break until next February. During this period, their balances won't grow. Then you have the new enhanced child tax credit for those with eligible children. The enhanced credit boosts the existing benefit from $2,000 to $3,000 and adds a $600 bonus for kids under the age of six for 2021. Although Biden's looking to extend that permanently. Now, half of that credit's being distributed to families in monthly installments from July to December. And then they say there may be other aid on the way in coming months, depending on what happens with this so-called soft infrastructure proposal, the one that would expand the social safety net to an unprecedented degree. Earned income tax credit, child and dependent care tax credit, mandated paid family and medical leave. It would also extend universal pre-K to 3 and 4 year old children and make community college tuition free. That, of course, is only a proposal. They're still looking for ways to, quote, pay for that additional or those additional benefits, Melody.
All right. You know, just don't ever expect your taxes to get any lower. They're only going to go higher.
Ding, 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 ding.
More
ding,
benefits, ding, more ding. Benefits, more money, more money, more money. Well, you know, I talked to a customer this morning, and he finally got his power on. from Hurricane Ida.
Wow.
And so there's still hundreds of thousands of Louisiana homes and businesses. There's thousands in Mississippi that still remain without power as a new front moved in. And, of course, that might threaten the restoration efforts. Now, the numbers amounted to about 500,000 Louisiana customers and over 4,600 in Mississippi without power as of yesterday afternoon. The National Weather Service issued a flash flood watch for southeastern Louisiana yesterday.
Jeez.
Showers and thunderstorms. Expect 3 more inches of rain. And the warning said soil conditions are saturated or nearly saturated, and heavy rainfall may quickly lead to flash flooding. And storms could hamper the restoration. So, you know, it's a lot of folks.
Yeah.
And you know what my customer said?
But.
And it's really true. He says, you know, he says, without power, he says, it's like going back to the 1700s.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? Without power, that's almost kind of true, isn't it, Dave?
Jeez, I just can't imagine the sweltering heat and humidity with no air conditioning. I mean, that alone, if you're at any age, right, but particularly if, you know, newborns and the very elderly, that's brutal.
Yes.
And for an extended period, I mean, 1 or 2 days, that's bad enough. But boy, for
weeks.
Oh, my gosh. Now, this one company, Entergy, its customers were notified about these new flash flood warnings. But in the context that, you know, they could be hampered and possibly not finished until September 29th for the hardest hit communities. That would be a full month after Hurricane Ida made landfall. They say timing's everything, but location, location, location. Boy, when it comes to physical disasters like these, not sure there's any safe place, but some places are a little bit safer than others, I'll tell you that.
And, you know, you're right. I mean, it's, you know, it's bad for everyone. But the elderly that I think of are the ones that are in the nursing homes.
Oh, yeah.
And hospital
absolutely.
I mean, they can't get out to go anywhere to cool off. I mean, even if you're, you know, 85 and you're at home and you can still walk to your closest store or something to cool off. Well, no, I guess no, they wouldn't have heat. No, they can't. Never mind. Never mind, Dave. Let's move on.
Listen, I'll tell you.
I'm having a 3-day weekend blurb, mind blurb. What?
Well, I'll tell you a quick funny story. I talked to my mom over the weekend. She's 82, and she's in a nursing home rehabbing from a recent hospital stay, and she was complaining of a hot flash. they still have their air conditioning going on, and she's complaining. It's like, good Lord. I said, Mom, be thankful that you've got AC.
Yeah. We did talk about this also, this auto chip shortage. And again, it's GM is halting or continuing to halt production at 8 of its North American assembly plants. The plants, Indiana, Missouri, Michigan, Tennessee, Canada, and Mexico will only be offline, though, for a few weeks, hopefully. And a lot of these chip plants are located in Southeast Asia. And, of course, they're blaming the pandemic. Oh, good grief.
I'm going to have to watch Animal House tonight now. I mean, the Delta House got blamed for everything in that movie. And it seems like a good time for it, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Now they're prepping us for a new strain. Is it the Mu? This is from somewhere else and so forth. And I mean, anyway.
Well, what's striking me about this story is how low these inventories are down. U.S. light car inventory down 70%. GM inventories were down 86% in August. And that's hard to come back from. And so, you know, I think back to the GDP estimates from Goldman Sachs. Well, hey, if it's just 0.3% lighter, boy, the numbers like these car inventories, it makes you wonder if it's not going to be worse.
And then I go back to being told that these Asian countries that do where all these plants are told to hoard, not to release the information. So I'm wondering how much of that is going on.
Well, that's an interesting question, because they're saying that even if things were to be resolved right now, I mean, everything goes away and we're back to normal, they say it would take at least 6 months for chips to reach automakers in the U.S. And those are the people who are saying, well, that's not going to happen. And because of it, the chip shortage isn't going to be over until 2022 or 2023. Again, you know, even these downgraded forecasts for next year, Melody, just seem to be too optimistic to me.
I couldn't agree with you more. And we've talked about how so many of these ports, especially on the West Coast, how many cargo ships are waiting to be unloaded. The normal wait time, if I recall correctly, was like 0-point-something days, and now they're up to almost 8 days before they get unloaded. And Port of Boston is looking to expand. As we see yards of containers piled as high as the local fire departments allow. So now we're beginning to see some of the smaller regional trade gateways. They're trying to take an opportunity to expand amid all of this congestion. Port of Boston, where the cranes of the Conley Terminal near Southeast Industrial Core stands just under the final approach to the Logan Airport. The port committed to spending $850 million in recent years to become big ship ready and better compete with larger rivals. Now, the crown jewels of the expansion, three taller cranes expected to be commissioned in late September, and the additional capacity could hardly have, you know, actually, let's talk about timing. Many of the larger ports are handling record amounts of cargo this year, and but Boston, which bills itself as the only full-service container port serving the six New England states, they haven't returned to its pre-pandemic volumes. It has about 45% share of the region's market for inbound and outbound freight, and a number of port officials expect will go well over 50% when all of these improvements are finished, Dave.
Oh, boy. Well, they say that keys to that effort in Boston are those new cranes and a deeper harbor, the ones that allow the massive vessels from China. Laura Gleason, who's the number two at the Massachusetts Port Authority, says that they have so many importers and exporters that are already saying, sign me up for more bookings. And the demand is really bursting at the seams to bring their cargo through here. It's just that they haven't been able to. Right now, Boston's served by two container services that go into and out of there on a weekly basis. One's from North Europe, another linking Asia via the Ocean Alliance. Now, Gleason said, we're already in deep conversations with the ocean carriers who are making decisions at their Asian headquarters. So I know they're really anxious to start handling the larger ships. The cranes, they say, will help, but dredging the harbor to 47 feet and as deep as 50 feet, and also expanding the turning basin
So these huge vessels that carry as many as 14,000 20-foot containers can navigate safely, meaning they can turn around and not be in a Suez Canal-like situation. So, hey, right here in the greater Northeast.
Well, no time frame on that, right, though?
I didn't read any.
I mean, how long would it take to dig?
Well, it's not so much the digging. One thing I've learned from Delaware River dredging in the last 10 years is that the real heavy lifting is in getting the approvals. because the environmentalists are really active in these river ports. The smaller ones in particular, like in Philadelphia and the Delaware River and there near Logan Airport. So I think, in Philadelphia's case, I think it's taken literally over a decade. And there are multiple jurisdictions, New Jersey and Pennsylvania in this particular case that require approval. And additional regulatory authority. So once they get past that, apparently the dredging itself is, you know, it's not overnight, but it's, you know, then they consider it almost a done deal, and then it's just getting it done the right way.
Okay. Let's see, what else is next? You know, we were talking about the South, and we were talking about the power through Hurricane Ida, but more Americans are moving south?
Yeah, this digital moving company, Updater is its name, recently looked at a random sample of 1.5 million moves to try and figure out which cities people were moving to. And here's what they found. Orlando, Florida led all cities with the most net inbound moves, followed by Las Vegas, Denver, Savannah, Georgia, and Dallas, Texas in fifth. Rounding out the top 10 were Tampa, Florida, Austin, Texas, Nashville, Fort Myers, Florida, and West Palm Beach, Florida. The next 10 were only slightly more geographically diverse, with six of them being in the southern states and four of them not, states like Arizona, Washington, Oregon, and Washington, two in Washington, in fact. Of course, the other six, 11 through 20, were Florida, South Carolina, and North Carolina. So it looks like Americans are fleeing the far west and northeast for warmer temperatures and more conservative politics, Melody.
All righty. And we're fleeing into our second break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other business this final segment. Call her in the office at 1-800-375-4188, 800-375-4188. No American Survival newsletter this week in honor of Labor Day. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. Our latest blog from last week talked about jobs, inflation, and gold. Last Friday, again, heading into the Labor Day weekend, stocks headed down, gold and silver headed up. Inflation and jobs were the major culprits, although a slew of other economic and geopolitical factors are playing into rising market volatility. Friday's government jobs report, for August, took the wind out of the sails of those who were expecting continuing labor market momentum from July. Of course, we now know that the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the economy added just 235,000 new jobs last month, woefully short of the roughly three times that amount of new hires economists were expecting. In fact, August's total was the worst since January and comes with growing fears of the pandemic variant and the impact that that could have on what's already been so far a mostly roller coaster rebound. Leisure and hospitality jobs, which had been the primary driver of overall gains at 350,000 a month since February, again took the brunt of the August stall as the U3 rate in the industry ticked higher to 9.1%. The month saw an increase of about 400,000 who said they couldn't work for pandemic-related reasons, pushing that total up to 5.6 million. Still, the news wasn't all bad. Again, as Melody mentioned last segment, weekless jobless claims have been falling steadily to their lowest levels now since the early days of the pandemic. But a large gap remains. And it's not that there aren't enough jobs out there either. I mean, the job placement company Indeed estimates there are about 10.5 million job openings now, easily a record. And amid job growth being far below expectations, inflation continues to exceed them, both of economists and consumers, the expectations, that is. Government estimates that the CPI is about 5.5%. That's the largest jump using their numbers since August 2008, and almost triple the Fed's long-term goal of 2%. John Williams of ShadowStats.com believes actual inflation may be as high as 13.5%, supplying older government methodologies, and that's closer to seven times the Fed's goal. Well, whatever the real rate, and there's good reason to think it's somewhere between 5.5% and 13.5%. Many analysts are blaming the Fed itself for either causing, contributing, or certainly exacerbating price increases over the past year with its historic bond buying program and negative real interest rates. Others say Congress and the White House share in the blame, as they do, for their support of unprecedented stimulus spending, with more to come, possibly a lot of it. Still others point to the persistent pandemic and its brutal impact on global supply chains, most of which haven't been able to keep up with demand. All three groups have a good point. But now you have economic historian Neil Ferguson, who says inflation could be repeating the path of the late 1960s, laying the foundation for prolonged high prices for years to come. Ferguson believes that policymakers are facing skyrocketing inflation as a result of responding to the pandemic in a fashion similar to the response to the Great Recession. What's interesting, he said, about disasters is that one can lead to another. You can go from a public health disaster to a fiscal, monetary, and potentially inflationary disaster, is what Ferguson said at the Ambrosetti Forum in Italy. Any doubts the Fed's officials' dubious claims of temporary or transitory inflation? How long is transitory, he asks. At what point do expectations fundamentally shift, especially if the Fed's telling people they don't mind if inflation goes above target for a while? Ferguson, who's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institute, added, "My sense is that we are not heading for the 1970s, but could be rerunning the late 60s when Fed Chair McChesney Martin lost control of inflation expectations." Ferguson suggested that the high inflation of the 70s had its origins in the late 60s, adding that it was too early to conclude with confidence that the current rise is transitory. Now, earlier last week, the S&P Case-Shiller Index, which measures home prices across 20 major cities in the U.S., rose over 19% on an annualized basis in June, the largest jump going back to 1987. A separate survey from the Conference Board showed that consumers now see inflation running at close to 7% in a year from now. That's up a full percentage point from a year ago, or 17%. Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers even tweeted, "Every time you hear that inflation is transitory, remember, housing represents 40% of the core CPI." Protracted inflation, sorry about that, along with a return to strong jobs for September, October, and November could definitely keep pressure on the Fed to start their bond tapering sooner than later. However, if jobs data in the next coming 2 to 3 months fall real short of expectations, like this past month, the Fed will likely wait until next year before tightening. Ferguson suggested that the Delta variant may have done the Fed a favor in cooling the economy slightly after a red-hot late spring and early summer, but other factors could still come into play. He noted, quote, "The thing that would really de-anchor inflation expectations would be if this Cold War between the U.S. and China escalated into a hot war, say, over Taiwan." Ferguson speculated that in light of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, Chinese President Xi Jinping may see the developing American reluctance for new military conflict as an opportunity to try to seize total control of Taiwan. That, he suggested, would force the U.S. into a decision of whether to enter another distant war or pull back on its global military dominance. Each of these signs, ladies and gentlemen, point to rising uncertainty and volatility, ultimately resulting in the climbing in gold and silver prices as we head into the fall. Up and up they should go. Where they stop, who knows? Now, let's talk about government debt, shall we? The balance in the federal government's checking account, the Treasury General Account at the New York Fed, known as the TGA, plunged by $240 billion since the end of July to $297 billion. That, according to the Fed's weekly balance sheet. On August 1st, the amount of the gross national debt outstanding, $28.43 trillion, essentially became the debt ceiling that can't be breached unless or until Congress raises it or suspends it, as it's done 78 times since 1960. Government's now paying for its deficits not by issuing new debt. But by drawing down the TGA and by using what Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen calls extraordinary measures. At the rate of decline since August 1st, the TGA balance will likely hit zero in mid-October. Now, this out-of-money date could be extended by further extraordinary measures into November, which is when the government would begin defaulting on its debt payments and other bills. Now, the TGA has been through huge gyrations over the years. More recently, in the spring of last year, 2020, Treasury issued $3 trillion in new debt to fund the biggest stimulus and bailout programs in U.S. history, but spent only a part of it, and the TGA ballooned to $1.8 trillion by last July. In January 2021, Treasury began drawing down the TGA by reducing the amounts it borrowed to bring it back to the normal range by summertime. During the debt ceiling farce of 2017, just before Congress rose the debt ceiling, the TGA had been drawn down to a mere $39 billion. Given how huge daily outlays are now, just 4 years later, that's uncomfortably close to zero. This time around, the outflows are vastly greater with all the stimulus and are associated with much more uncertainty as a result. The real suspense lies in how close the TGA will get to zero before Congress raises or suspends the debt ceiling. But listen, the ending of the upcoming farce is already known. Congress will avert the default at the last minute, as it's done dozens of times over the last 60 years, after everyone gets through extorting financial or policy concessions from the other side. The upcoming debate in Congress is a farce because Congress already appropriated the funds to be spent and to be borrowed and has told the administration in detail how to spend those funds, including all the, and all the pork barrel programs for its own members of Congress, that is. And then some in the House and Senate have the gall to say, you cannot borrow the money we already told you to spend. Well, if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling in time and ushers in an unprecedented default, financial markets here and around the world would have, in the words of Wolf Richter, a hissy fit of historic proportions. I love that phrase. And every member of Congress and the general public, from the richest to everyday investors like you and me, would lose a massive portion of their assets in a matter of days or even hours. And that's precisely why Congress will never, ever let a default happen. You can take that to the bank. As I mentioned, since August 1st, the gross national debt has been locked in at $28.43 trillion. And right now, the government can't add to that amount without additional legislation. But it can refinance its maturing debts. So how will the Treasury Department use extraordinary means to keep the government from defaulting? Janet Yellen's already explained. On August 2nd, she told Congress, rating the contributions made by members of the three big federal retirements systems, the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund, the Postal Service Retiree Health Benefits Fund, and the Government Securities Investment Fund of the Thrift Savings Fund. At some point, as the Treasury balance sheet runs lower, closer to, well, I don't know, whenever it's going to be, late September, early October, Yellen will undoubtedly inform Congress of further extraordinary measures she will take to ward off the worst-case scenario. And then the extraordinary measures that can be taken will be taken. And all the money the government has left is what's in the TGA. So, over the next few weeks, we'll be watching what's left in the dwindling government checking account. Yes, to see how close it gets to zero, before Congress inevitably and certainly will vote to lift the debt ceiling. But make no bones about it. In the days after the debt ceiling is lifted or suspended, the government pension funds from which these extraordinary measures will be funded will be made whole with new congressional appropriations or actions. And then new debt will be issued, and the gross national debt will spike once again to make up for lost time. Whether the debt goes to 30, 31 trillion in a year, or up to 35 trillion, if both infrastructure programs are passed, whether the debt goes up another 10, 15, 20 trillion over the next 10, 15 years? Well, I guess it remains to be seen. But in this case, I predict what is past is prologue. Does that make sense to you? No, me neither. Well, that does it for today's program. That's all the time we have for today's show. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye. That's too bad.